Welcome to My Movies. This week, as I dust off some old episodes from the archives, we're taking a beach trip. The first part of that trip is Muppet Treasure Island, a classic adventure involving the Muppets and Tim Curry trying to harness that power from Muppet Christmas Carol. They dusted off an old classic and Muppified it by, unfortunately this time, subtly, they went overboard, which makes this less of a classic than Muppet Christmas Carol, but still kind of cheesy fun. So enjoy our revisiting from the olden days, Muppet Treasure Island. Thanks, guys. So Daniel, what's up? What are we doing today?
We apparently are doing Muppet Treasure Island.
Well, I am a fan of such Treasure Island. So what, well, I guess we should start off with, it's a Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Muppet movies traditionally are silly versions of a traditional plotline. Right? So what do you remember about this particular silly movie?
Ooh, well, unlike Muppet Christmas Carol, which I have seen a few times at Christmas over the past few years, I haven't seen this since it came out in 95 or 96 when I was still a kid. And this may have been the second Muppet movie that I saw in theaters, the first being Christmas Carol when I was like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
God, I feel old now. But anyway, I remember it was pretty much just Treasure Island with Tim Curry as Long John Silver with his leg obviously tied behind his back rather than missing.
Sure.
And honestly, I just haven't seen it in that time. And the only scene I remember really is some of the songs.
Well, it's interesting for me that you chose this for a couple of reasons. For those who listen to this show a lot, Daniel's what we would call an asshole. You know,
I prefer dickhead myself.
Well, I mean, the thing about Daniel on this podcast is that you're a purist. We watched Robin Hood, and you thought there wasn't enough Errol Flynn in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie where there could be Errol Flynn in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting because Muppet Treasure Island, for me, represents a divergence for the Muppets. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes they take tropes and run with it, like the Great Muppet Caper or the Muppets Take New York or whatever. But for the most part, they're still original movies. I almost don't count Muppet Christmas Carol because everyone does a Christmas Carol, right? Like, even an episode of The Flintstones could be a Christmas Carol.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, but like this or The Wizard of Oz, which they also did, are direct movie parodies, I guess you'd call them, right? So how do you think this stacks up for a Muppet movie?
Well, the thing about the Disney Robin Hood was that it was trying... what it was trying to do was supplant everybody's memory of this great old fable, an old tale that had influenced people for hundreds of years. And I don't think that's quite what the Muppets were going for. They were taking a traditional story and being silly with it. It really was more the Zucker Abrams Zucker style of telling the story.
Well, and it's funny you put it that way, because to me, I remember this almost in the same vein as like a Monkey Island kind of, mm-hmm. You know, like, because it's very tongue in cheek and it's very silly, and both now are owned by Disney. So, the other thing I want to say about this is, I forget what year you said, 95. I don't remember when it came out, but it was mid to late 90s.
I remember Muppets from Space came out in 99, and this was like 3 or 4 years before that. So,
and Muppets from Space may be a Stay Tuned or a Never Mention Again. Because that might be the only one I remember reading bad reviews about.
Now, how can you hate a movie where Sam the Eagle curses out Dawson from Dawson's Creek?
Well, you might have just resold me on it.
There you go.
Considering that I really like Sam the Eagle and he works very sparingly. You know, he's a character you want vaguely. I've recently watched Muppet Most Wanted. Mm. And the idea that he works as the CIA agent works perfectly for that same reason.
I hope that's a scene in there, because I do remember Sam the Eagle and Dawson being there. But if they don't meet, I'm going to feel like a damn fool.
Well, it would be like in Heat when we finally have Robert De Niro
and Al Pacino together at last.
Sam the Eagle and Dawson. The other thing I was going to say about this is when it came out, I was at that age where my parents had decided that movies that were PG-13 in the 80s were okay for me to watch.
Mm.
And so Tim Curry was one of those first actors that I remember. Oh, I remember him from other things. I remember him from Clue. I remember him from things like Rocky Horror. And like Tim Curry, one of the most talented comedic actors possibly ever. But he's one of those first people where I'm like, oh, it's him.
Now, I remember him mostly from my childhood as a voiceover artist. So I'd see him all the time in the credits of cartoons, especially on like Nickelodeon stuff, because wasn't he in Ah, Real Monsters and The Wild Thornberries?
He was indeed.
That's what I remembered him from. So seeing him, it's like, whoa, that guy actually has a face?
Yeah. And he has, I guess, I mean, to your credit, a very distinctive voice. Mm-hmm. And even when he's doing Long John Silver, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has that kind of, nyar, order the fish and fingers. Like, he still sounds like Tim Curry.
The other scene I do remember in this, which I'm eager to see how well of a joke this actually played, was Mr. Pimple, the man who lives in Fozzie Bear's finger. Do you remember that?
I do. And Fozzie Bear here is the, like, for those of you who don't remember the plot, it's told through the story of a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, who ends up working as like a porter and then
he a cabin boy?
Yeah, he ends up being a cabin boy for Fozzie the Bear in this story. and they end up finding this treasure map, mm-hmm. But it's actually Long John Silver's treasure map.
Mm.
And of course, because it's the Muppets, it is a musical, which in and of itself should bring everyone to pause.
Did Paul Williams write the songs? Because that's all that matters.
And Joe Raposo better write the music.
There you go.
But I guess we'll have to see, because I don't remember much about this movie other than the fact that, you know, it's a Muppet movie with Tim Curry. Like, and I think there's an Island of Pigs.
That Miss Piggy's the queen of?
That Miss Piggy's probably the queen of, yes. but I think it's appropriate we're doing this since the Muppets are coming back soon. And yeah, I'm happy about that too. And so without further ado, let's go watch the Muppet Treasure Island.
Yar.
Welcome to the realm of skepticality.
Skepticality.
What is skepticality? Skepticality is a podcast for those of us who view the world in a skeptical way.
Skepticality.
We do our best to find the truth behind the news, urban legends, UFOs, paranormal encounters, science, underreported social issues, and historical misconceptions.
You just don't get it.
Do you have a problem with the news? Do you like to make fun of those neighbors with tinfoil hats? Do you want to learn some new stuff? Do you want to get something you're not going to hear on your 24-hour McNews channel or the local radio dial?
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Then tune in by visiting us at www.skepticality.com.
Spell it.
That's skepticality.com. Grab a couple of shows and stick them in your ear.
Ooh, it's waxy in there.
And by all means, don't listen to that voice in my head.
Voice? What voice?
There's no voice.
Skepticality. Truth in podcasting.
Was ever told of the lust for treasure and the love of gold.
Shiver my timber, shiver my sides. Yo ho, heave ho! There are hundreds as strong as the wind and tide. Yo ho, heave ho! Shiver my timber, shiver my sails. Stand and tell no tales.
Welcome to Miopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, I forgot to come up with a joke.
We're pirating something more than music today with the Muppet Treasure Island.
X marks the spot, and he missed it. No.
Oh, that's even better.
Ladies.
I got nothing.
I'm Nick Hoffman, editor of Dude Letter. And tonight, we were defended by...
Hello, this is Daniel.
And on panel, we have...
Thomas Herman.
And
Matthew W. Quinn.
That's right, gentlemen and ladies. We're keeping it high and tight tonight. Before we get too far into this, though, Daniel, did this hold up the way you hoped it would?
Well, first, I'd like to make an apology. I said that the person in Fozzie Bear's finger was Mr. Pimple. It's apparently Mr. Bimbo.
So, middle school drama for you, I guess.
I'm not touching that one.
But don't you want to?
No.
Bimbos.
We should stop. We should squeeze this off right now.
In terms of whether or not it held up, I don't know. I mean, it was a fun little entertaining distraction, but it wasn't really classic Muppets in the way that Muppet Christmas Carol was, or the original Muppet movie was, or that new Muppet movie with Jason Segel in it was. So I,
which is a movie and a half ago at this point.
I know.
And as a reminder, this one is recorded now. Whether or not it comes out in time, who knows, because I've been lazy lately, but it's being recorded before the TV show comes out, and that's why I wanted to do this movie. And so, to Daniel's point, does watching a movie like this make you want to see the new Muppet show all the more?
Well, they've got a good track record so far, and they have at least one classic TV show under their belt, but this does show that there are times where even their strong formula can stumble a little bit.
Whoa. No. They have two. Muppet Babies was fantastic.
When you rule, it's kind of weird, and you wish that you weren't there.
When you have a TV show that sparks Return of the Killer Tomatoes, we can talk.
Okay.
Oh, and that's why I guess Clone Wars doesn't count, because the show is different than the movie. If they made a Muppet Babies movie, we're off track. Before we get too much further, I believe this time, since Daniel's defending, Mr. Quinn, you had a plot summary.
All right, it's a classic tale of Treasure Island, only where half the cast are puppets.
Did we say the movie title?
I believe we did.
Good. So basically, it starts out with Jim Hawkins, who looks like he's about 12 with a mullet, working in a bar.
Tavern.
In Bristol, I guess. Yep. And they have this drunken old pirate named Billy Bones, who must be drinking off his PTSD because he talks about how he's got the horrors and needs rum. Mm-hmm. And then Blind Pew, who's basically an elderly blinded Skeksy, shows up and gives him the black spot rather than just shooting him immediately, which basically gives enough time to give the map to Jim Hawkins. And so he manages to get a ship to go hunting for the treasure, where the ship's cook is played by Tim Curry, who is the most obvious false friend imaginable. Turns out Tim Curry, Long John Silver, is a pirate, and they're going to try, who was on the crew that buried the treasure in the first place, the ones who didn't get murdered, and he wants a treasure himself. So let the fun begin.
I'm going to get...
Stop. Pause it. Okay. We good? Thank you, Matt. So...
I've got a question about the summary. Tim Curry's Long John Silver has a little pet lobster. Would you say that this pet lobster is Tim Curry's faithful handyman?
Oh, my God.
I'm going to get stuff thrown at me for saying that, but I had to.
Rosy red, and I'm not touching that one.
I think we should go through these characters.
That sounds like it'd be excruciatingly painful.
I think the difference, to Daniel's point earlier, something Thomas and I, and I guess Daniel, since he was the one who suggested this, especially love about the Muppets, is the fact that the Muppets are the Muppets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the whole purpose of them in my head is the archetype of the movies. And in the intro, as you guys already heard, is Daniel and I were talking about the difference between an original Muppet plot, which is already cliched. The Muppet Movie, The Great Muppet Caper, Muppets Take Manhattan are the most cliched plots you can have. This is different because it's taking an existing property. The reason it works is because if you had to picture who was going to be the narrator, like sarcastic type, you know it's going to be Gonzo. If you needed a captain of the ship that is the Muppets, it's going to be, you know, Kermit. It's going, like, it is who it is.
Well, what struck me about this one is the strength of the Muppets in the past and their TV show and their other movies is their star power. And first, how they're able to get all those people. And second, how they're able to play that off. I mean, these are serious actors. And it's that it's best when they're playing their roles straight against these puppets who are also being straight, but it's impossible to take them seriously. And this movie was kind of lacking that for me. I mean, they kill two of the three top billed actors or, like, forgot about them in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you have a point, and one of the best descriptions, and I said it during the movie, but honestly, it's not mine, and I'm not going to take credit for it, is that one of the best things about the Muppet and the Muppets and the Muppet Show is that never before and never since have you been able to take such big name actors and have them come on and deliberately be upstaged by a frog or a pig. And well, I agree that I think this movie did lack that to a degree.
Well, I want to add it too. Something that always bothers me about these later Muppet movies is that rather than whittle down the cast, they seem to bring back everyone ever. Mm-hmm. And so characters who I didn't really care about before appear, and ones that I kind of liked don't. It, like, the thing about the Muppets is it's, you know, it's or there's a core, you know, there's the nucleus at the middle, and then there's like the electrons that kind of float around it. Like, I would have preferred Pepe, the flea guy.
Oh, the shrimp? I think he actually was created for Muppets from Space. So
Well, I mean, but I thought he was in Muppets. Oh, well, even if not, I apologize. But like, hell, I would have preferred a Fraggle by this point than half of these characters. You know what I mean? Like, they brought back that one guy who had that one musical number at that one point. And like, it's impressive as hell to see that scene on the bow of a ship where everyone's having a musical number and there's more Muppets than people. But I don't care about so many of these characters that get a nod and a wink. That's where the Muppets get bad to me, when there's a wink.
Well, we were trying to search for some of the classic Muppets in the credits. Like, I know there was a fight over whether or not Rolf was in this movie, and he is, but at the same time, they weren't giving that much prominence to even some of those famous characters. It was more about, like, characters introduced two movies ago.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, Rolf is, from, you know, the biographics and all of that, was Jim Henson's favorite character. And I realized when this movie came out, Jim Henson was no longer with us and hadn't been for a while. But honestly, if you're going to put Rolf in a picture, he should have some airtime, not just a wink, as Nick said. And that wink almost makes it worse, because if I see Rolf, I want to hear Rolf, because he's a great character. He's funny. He can be serious. And he's just kind of an interesting character to have around. So if you're not going to use him, don't just have him in the background.
Well, and the problem I had too is other characters that get more screen time don't get their character traits. Mm-hmm. Like Beaker and Bunsen. Like, there's a couple times where they're doing experiments, which is fine, but so much of this should have been like Beaker trying to invent a new compass, or him pulling out a giant gun that just doesn't work and only hurts Beaker, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's their character traits. Why not run with it? And I get it. Like, by this point, you can boil it down to, like, Gonzo and Kermit and Fozzie, but why would you bother then introducing so many other characters? You can invent new Muppets for zero reason. And besides, the human characters, who are probably a mixture of people and puppeteers, are great. You can use them more, which, I mean, again, it's a Muppet movie. And we talked about in the intro, The Muppet Christmas Carol, well, this is perfectly balanced. Here, so much of it feels forced, where you'll get this brief look of Lou.
You know what this reminds me of, if I may jump in?
Please.
You also Muppets Most Wanted, right? The most recent Muppets movie?
Sure.
There's this joke in there where Robin, Kermit's nephew, shows up and talks about how classic Muppets aren't being given enough lip service. And then, oh, no, wait, it was Rizzo that did that. And then he jumped aside, and then Robin jumped in and said, I agree, essentially. It felt like a 90-minute version of that joke.
Yeah. And then, as I recall, a line later, it just has Robin leaves the show, gets kicked off because of plot. And then Bunsen's the one's like, wait, didn't we just have an entire movie where he tried to join the Muppets? That's the other half of this coin, where they added someone from the last movie and they're like, wait, why is he here again?
Or even the you know, the 10-minute release from the San Diego Comic-Con, where they have, like, when they're in the boardroom trying to set up the meeting, and they've got this group of people behind them, like these Muppets that just show up, and you can't recognize them. You would never recognize them, because they honestly weren't in anything. But the joke was, I think I was in Muppets, three, and it was just kind of funny making fun of the whole thing. But I think what's sad is so Jim Henson died in 1990, and you had Muppets in 3D that came out in 91, which has just been sitting there on replay since 1991. And obviously, I'm sure Henson had something to do with that, but by the time it came out, others had to be involved. And they did it true justice. And I realize it's only like 15 minutes total, but still, when you see, you know, Muppets not being given their due when you could have just created new characters and gone with that, it is kind of sad going forward.
Well, and it's one of these things, and I'll put my foot down here and say, you know, the Muppets are one of my happy places. You know, like, I love them. And, you know, I think three or four years ago, there was an album that came out for the 20th anniversary, or 20, sorry.
The Green Album.
The Green Album, right.
Oh, the Weezer one?
Well, and it wasn't just Weezer. I think it was just Rivers sang a Rainbow Connection, and OK Go did the Muppets theme. And, like, that's one of those moments that made me feel, you know, touched by them. Like, I love the Muppets. It's interesting to see how they can be used, though. Like, before I was born, it was my grandfather's favorite show. Like, and that's not just on one side of the ocean. Like in Belgium, they showed for my other family. It's amazing to see their reach and breadth. And it's so funny to watch the Jason Segel movie where they're kind of talking about how they're so far out of pop culture that it's a joke because they've never been mainstream.
Well, I love, like, the Jason Segel version is so great because I love how it came about. Was after you watching, you know, doing Forgetting Sarah Marshall when he did, you know, his, you know, Dracula puppet show, and he was working with Henson Studios to do it, and he said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get together and do a movie? And they're like, let's talk.
Yeah.
And he was like, are you kidding me? Like, and that's how it came about.
And you can almost imagine that script written in crayon in the first draft.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's you know, like, it'd be like if I were to write it, it would start out with like a fake monster movie or a fake horror movie, and Kermit as a reporter character starting out as the plot device.
I remember that.
The exposition train on Sesame Street going, you know, we have this horrible monster approaching, and Godzilla, would you like a word? Thank you. This has been Kermit the Frog on the beat. Like,
you brought up the album earlier, and there's another aspect to the Muppets movies that we haven't addressed yet, but I felt that this one was lacking: the songs. Outside of the opening number, the songs in this movie were really weak and didn't serve really any purpose.
Well, the opening number, I agree, was great, but Cabin Fever was still fun. That
it
held
was
up.
Fun, but it didn't really have much of a purpose in terms of the movie. I mean,
it did advance the plot.
No, it didn't. I mean, like, the Jason Segel Muppets movie had some great numbers that advanced the plot. Muppet Christmas Carol did. The original Muppet movie did. Muppets Take Manhattan did, especially with that finale. I mean,
okay, so I think one of the things is it's great to point, and it's not just the music, it's everything in general. You look at the Muppet movie, you look at The Great Muppet Caper, and even Muppets Take Manhattan, and that's even pushing it to the outside of the original three, is that there really wasn't a wasted moment. There wasn't a wasted joke. Now, some of the jokes didn't necessarily advance the plot, but every scene pushed things forward. And this one, you had dead air. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, there was something going on, but it didn't necessarily matter.
And I want to push you on this, too. I think something that feels weird about this movie is all the Muppet movies inherently are vaudeville-ish, you know, because...
Yeah, it's all about let's put on a show.
Let's put on a show, and the jokes are very... There's two kinds of jokes, right? Because the ones... For those of you a little bit of inside baseball here, one of the rules we always have is don't write a joke in advance, mm-hmm. right? And the Muppets are the perfect example because the funniest moments, right, are twofold. They're the ones that just happen where all of a sudden, you know, Miss Piggy rears back and punches someone. They fly across the street as a ragdoll Muppet, right? And then they go limp dog, right? Completely limp. The other ones are the ones where someone like Fozzie makes a joke and then mugs at the camera and it's just dead air. That's the thing. Like,
waka waka.
And that's what it is. It's a Fozzie joke. You never want someone to make a Fozzie joke on the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's like a pun. It's, you know, it just lays there like a turd.
Well, people have tried.
Me. And you lay there like a turd. I start off the show with a fuzzy joke every episode for that reason.
And there's a pause every week after said joke.
Waka waka. Mm.
And that's the thing. Like, this movie is interesting, though, because whereas in The Great Muppet Caper, even, where I can't remember a single song, or The Muppet Movie, or even The Muppets, which won the Academy Award for Best Original Song, Man or a Muppet, written by Flight of the Conchords, by the way.
It should have been Life's a Happy Song, but
same
we'll
thing.
Get to that. Yeah.
But they were still written by the same person. I'll take it. Songs sometimes felt superfluous, mm-hmm. which is a problem. Because, again, the Cabin Fever song was great, but it violated the one rule of a musical, which is that all songs should advance the plot.
Well, I remember in Muppets from Space, they were, like, singing Celebrate in Brick House, which is even more of an egregious violation than this one. But
that, I mean,
even
that was,
so, they weren't even trying.
Well, that's the problem. One of the great things about Henson Studios was, I mean, honestly, I agree. I can't really remember a single song from The Great Muppet Caper. I can remember some from Muppets Take Manhattan, but honestly, I can remember every song from the original Muppet movie. I just can. It's their original.
Happiness Hotel is a great moving right along.
The Rainbow Connection.
Connection is possibly the greatest closing number ever. Better than Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I know I'll get hate mail because people hate me anyway. It might just be from, you know, my spouse who will just poke me in the night and say it's a better movie, which it is a better movie, but the first Muppet movie is, it's one of my few happy spaces.
Mm-hmm. It's one, I think it's one of the first DVDs I got as soon as it came out. I was like, I must have this. But one of the great things about the original Muppet movie was it is filled with cameos. And generally when you see a movie that is filled with, and it's weird when you say movie with cameos, it's an odd thing to say because, well, they're in a movie. There's no such thing as a guest starring in a movie, but the Muppets made that a thing. But that, all of these, you had Mel Brooks, you had, you know, Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah, he was the doctor in the first one, wasn't he?
Yeah. And I mean, you just had, I can't remember his name now, but there's just all of these big name actors. And
which big name actor were you thinking
I'm thinking
of?
Like it was one of the,
wasn't the guy?
I own this hotel. I own the guy who did like, I own this bar. He's like,
well, and the guy from, oh, God, who was the used car salesman with Sweetums? Anyway, thanks, Wikipedia.
Don Bluth and all of that. I mean, just all
you mean
of these.
Don DeLuise?
Don DeLuise and, yes, I'm sorry, Don DeLuise. And all of these people that managed to fly in it, and at never, at any point you see this person, did it ever overshadow the Muppets are in this scene? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I remember that as a kid. Like, and I go back now and I know how big these people are. I realize that these were the larger than life people of that era. These were, you know.
Well, and
yeah, exactly. And, I mean,
go ahead. No, please.
Well, I think the best example of this really was The Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine, who had just won an Oscar 5 years beforehand. He was already this established big name, and he was treating it very seriously, which was part of the joke, and that was part of the thing with the original ones, too. This didn't really have that.
Well, and I wanted to couple that with the fact that the Muppets have weight, and I don't want to say like they're heavy because that'd be a Miss Piggy joke that would punch me. But
Sweetums is heavy.
But like, you know, you can play a video game, you can look at CGI. I mean, like when I'm recording this, and who knows how this will last, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that came out in 2014 is streaming on Netflix, and I was watching it.
Oh yeah.
The thing is,
I liked it.
The turtles are fine. They just have no weight. You know what I mean? Like, there's a scene where there's an explosion, they're sliding down a mountain on their shell, yada, yada, yada. They feel like they're animated. You know, like, it's like watching a video game. I've been playing a lot of a basketball game on my PS4. And, like, on the free throw line, they're like, we want to make this look real. So the player's going to just bounce the ball a couple times before they take the shot. It looks like it's fake. It doesn't bounce right. You know what I mean? The Muppets always have a feel. And so it doesn't matter if they're like acting against Michael Caine or here Tim Curry. Since it's a physical object, they know where to look to make eye contact. They know how, like, if if what there's this movie ends with an amazing sword fighting sequence.
Oh,
where Kermit is actually sword fighting with Tim Curry. And yes, I know, as in a human being, Tim Curry could take a swing and even with a dull plastic sword cut Kermit in half. And yet there's a movement in which Kermit looks like he's actually taking on Tim.
It's like Yoda versus Count Dooku in Star Wars Episode 2. You know, guy's like four times as tall as a little green guy hopping around.
But honestly, I would state that in Muppet Treasure Island, it was more impressive to have Kermit go against Tim Curry than Yoda against Count Dooku.
Yeah.
Because Kermit was there.
As opposed to, it looked more realistic than when Luke just had him on his back and you heard the voice off camera and it was literally ADR, right? Mm-hmm. Because Yoda is there as opposed to a goddamn
a tennis ball
flipping around, because we've all had a ball and a stick flinging it like a paddle.
If anything, have I to say about it.
Who could freaking care? Like, honestly, that's the thing. It doesn't matter, but like, you've seen the trailers if you've been ever on Facebook, where, you know, the newest season's coming out with the TV show, and Kermit watches as Nathan Fillion comes out of Miss Piggy's trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't blink. They don't even try to make him blink, but just that dead expression as he watches him come out is amazing. Or he watches the golf cart go by with his new girlfriend in the middle of Duck. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it works.
And I will state this is the only, and I'm gonna state this is the truest, rankest amateur, but the only one here on panel tonight who actually does a bit of puppeteering. The idea of having to stick your arm up straight over your head for hours at a time is painful. It hurts. Your craft will make you hurt for it, and I have not even come close to what those guys had to do.
Well, I sometimes put a sock on my hand and make it talk. Doesn't that count?
Yeah, I remember your little illegal alien space Mexico creature.
Yes.
Step one, you have one beefy arm.
Yes.
Consummate V's.
All guys have that anyway, but the...
And where do you put that beefy arm?
So sorry, that just came out.
What he said.
Yes. No.
And you got to put it back in again.
I mean, you just to have that up there as opposed to just something CGI, it adds something to it. There's having something there, it does give the Muppets weight. There is a...
Now, that's true, but I think that could apply to all Muppet movies rather than this specific thing. And even if the stunts are impressive, I mean, ultimately, what's the point?
We should talk a little bit more about this movie specifically, because we've been talking about the Muppets as a whole. And I only want to cut this off because I'd really like to do at least one or two more Muppet podcasts.
Okay.
The problems with this movie inherently to me are... Well, first of all, part of me is frustrated because it's a pre-existing plot. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, actually, I think one of my problems with this is, honestly, I think I'm the only person on panel that feels like this. I've never liked Treasure Island as a story, and I can get a lot of hate for that. But in my opinion, Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island has always been to me kind of a boring storyline. I thought the book was just tedious and long. I did not enjoy it. I wasn't forced to read it, but I still didn't like it. And I feel like just, trouncing through that, as so many other movies have, it's just tried, tested, failed. And I think that is a bit of a problem.
Well, if I may piggyback off of that, I don't hate
Piggy.
Kermit. I can't. My Kermit. Voice. Yeah. I don't hate the story as a whole as much as you, but the whole maybe concept feels like a studio note. You know what I mean? Like,
well, actually, it was kind of brave to do a pirate movie because they were considered dead as a box office thing. I mean, Cutthroat Island came out around the same time, and that had been the biggest bomb ever up to that point.
Well, but I don't want to say I'm challenging you on that part of it, but like... However, the Treasure Island that I grew up watching before this movie was an old Disney movie.
Was it the one with Orson Welles as Long John Silver, or was there another one?
Possibly. But I mean, like, it was something I watched on ABC when it was the Disney Presents kind of movie, you know? And so I get the feeling that there was this, hey, the Muppets haven't put something out in a while. What do you want? And then they were just spitting around. And they're like, well, we do have this Treasure Island movie and we can do a double feature or something. You know, like, I mean, I would love to see a Muppet Frankenstein or, you know, some other classic movie.
The Muppet Friday the 13th. Miss Piggy goes skinny dipping, gets butchered.
Oh, no. The original Friday the 13th, she would be the one who...
She would
because
be the
mom,
killer.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Mrs. Voorhees is the killer. Whoa. The podcast took a turn, Matt, but we're going to go with it. You have... It couldn't be Kermit because Kermit should be the last guy, right?
How would you deal with all the Muppet nudity that would need to happen to make that movie work?
Who would notice? They're Muppets. They could just be in bikinis the whole time and it would be fine.
Felt hides a multitude of sins.
Felt me, baby. Felt me all night long. No,
but that's what he said.
Kermit is not the survivor girl in Friday the 13th of the Muppets.
Or A Nightmare on Elm Street. Where Kermit's the Freddy narrator type.
Can Rolf be the Johnny Depp character?
What's up, bitch?
Hey, a Muppet Hellraiser. Start doing Hellraiser lines with Kermit voice. We have such... I can't mimic Kermit. Do we have such sights to show you?
We have such sights to show you. I can't do the stage. I love it.
Who would be Frank Cotton amongst the Muppets?
Oh my God, that's a great question.
Tim Curry? Oh.
But remember, it's still a Muppet movie, so whenever the like ominous music starts playing, they have to pan across to Rolf and just go, they could almost pull a Flintstone line, it's a living, and then pan back.
I still want Gonzo as Rod Serling for Twilight Zone. So.
I can't do a Gonzo, but we've gone beyond sight, sound, and even chickens. Wait, where are the chickens?
They're in Gonzo's pants.
No, that was the starfish.
Yeah, is that a bestiality joke?
I would like to know.
Yeah.
They suck. Sorry, we're done.
That was a joke in this movie that Gonzo stuck starfish down his pants.
I don't know if he stuck them there. They just happened to be there.
And he needed them as ninja stars.
And they were his hobbies.
People are made of stars.
Actually, I think that was one of the best jokes in the movie.
Billions
I want to hear about your
billions
hobbies.
Of stars.
Hey, now you're an all-star.
Well, no, the best joke in
Get
the movie
your pants
was
on, go
at
play.
The best joke in the movie is at the beginning when they're digging through that person's luggage or belongings and pull out that copy of Henry Kissinger's Diplomacy.
I think that was actually one of the best and saddest points in the movie. It was one of the only points that was just kind of like, hey, look. A joke for the parents. And we didn't get a ton of those. I mean, yeah, we got a few. But, I mean, some of those, like, I mean, the running gags and the Muppet, you know, all of that, it kind of lacked the depth that some of the other Muppet movies had.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it's not even depth. It's just that since it's a story where they're going through the paces, they have to interject their own jokes. You know, it's punch up by the Muppets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Wolf.
Oh, yeah, that joke.
Well, and then there's other things which are frustrating. Go ahead.
I was saying to punch things up, like the Cabin Fever song.
Yeah. Yes. Or the fact that Statler and Waldorf only appeared two or three times because they're the
masthead.
The mastheads. Thank you.
They appeared more than once. I really only counted the one. I may have missed another.
The bikinis joke, and they save the people. They save Kermit and Miss P from falling, and they're when the ship is setting off, they're like, "See the world!" They said. I think is it a bow sprite? The masthead would be a little crow's nest on top.
Oh.
Well, whatever it is, it's usually portrayed by a semi-topless woman at the front of the ship. They're on the bow,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay, so as we keep, you know, being drawn back to comparisons to other Muppet movies, I think a question to ask, and I don't mean to step on Nick's toes, is does this stand as its own Muppet movie, or does it just make you think of the other Muppet movies, which were better?
For me, it's the second one, really. I mean, this is something for completist Muppet fans, just to see more of the technique of how to make a Muppet movie rather than just watching, being entertained by them.
Well, at the beginning, in our intro, I talked to Daniel and I said, this is a weird one, not because it's covering another material, But I said, you know, Christmas Carol doesn't count because everyone did a Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter if it's the Simpsons or the Flintstones or whatever. Red Dwarf did, you know, like everyone does a Christmas Carol. But this and the Muppet Wizard of Oz is different.
There's the Muppet Wizard of Oz?
Yes. With Ashanti.
It was actually more of like the Muppets the Wiz, but I mean.
Oh, that's who that was. I could have sworn Beyonce was in that.
No, I thought it was Brandy for a while too, but the reason is I didn't bother to see it. And it was right at that time where it could have been almost anyone and I still wouldn't have bothered. So for me, it almost makes a designation between the two kinds of Muppet movies. The ones that are their own plot and the ones that aren't. And the thing is, when they make their own movie, with the possible exception of the Jason Segel one, which is possibly one of the most original movies they've ever done. And it's not me kicking them. I like what they do, but generally they're a vaudeville kind of thing. And the road trip movie is perfect. You know, if it wasn't them, it could have been Abbott and Costello. It could have been the Marx Brothers. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very simple plot. And then, you know, go ahead.
I love vaudeville for that. And the Marx Brothers is a great point, which is like you've got your main characters you all recognize. And then like you have all these jokes. And then you realize, oh, crap, we've got to put the story back in here because we've lost track.
Well, and even if it's not that, you know, think of another Groucho Marx movie like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, where you're just like, there's this handful of people. And then all of a sudden, that one guy you remember from that one time, he's the guy refilling their gas tank.
Yep.
You know, that's what it is.
That's a good comparison with Muppet movies is it's a mad, 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 mad world because it's just usually chock full of the most random people. And they're just playing off each other rather than trying to outdo each other.
Now, as a question for the few of us here who are like comedy nerds, would you prefer to be in a Muppet movie or an SNL movie?
They're better.
Well, and they're tighter movies because since, you know, two or three people do the voice acting and the scripts are tighter, you know, the jokes are going to land. And there's no egos.
Well, I feel like there are a lot of times in, like, you know, an SNL movie as opposed to a Muppet movie where it's like, you know, it's like where you sit there and they tell a joke and they just kind of stare at you. And the Muppets do that too, but it's kind of like a stare going, did you get that? As opposed to, hey, look, we just broke the fourth wall. And it's just kind of a...
Well, at the end of the day, there's only been like maybe one or two good SNL movies. Only one great one, maybe one or one good one. And there's been at least three great Muppet
movies.
And
I can guess which one it is. You're thinking of... Wait, it'll hit me. The Ladies' Man movie.
Oh, you caught me. You caught me.
Well, and you know, even past that one... I almost want to say foible, but it's not a foible. It's a disaster. I think the Muppets are better as an ensemble because there's inherently these diametrically opposed characters. You know, like Kermit, who's the level one, is one thing. So it doesn't matter if he's against Fozzie or Piggy, fine. But then, you know, Gonzo, who's a combination of a horn dog and the wild card bitches, to quote It's Always Sunny, you know, like, and then Piggy, who's the prima, like, it's these wonderful Hollywood archetypes, which Hollywood doesn't even make fun of.
Well, which character do you think was utilized the best for their archetype in this movie? I would say Sam the Eagle.
Sam is great. Go ahead, Thomas.
I honestly actually think that as one of the things that it did well, I honestly just, you know, I still stand by I don't like Treasure Island, and I think that definitely hurt, you know, a tried and failed storyline. I honestly think that they treated the Muppets the way they should be treated. I do not think that they truly failed with the Muppets they used as their main cast. Kermit was Kermit, Piggy was Piggy, you know, Gonzo was, you know, Gonzo, and Sam the Eagle pulled itself off. I don't think any of them truly failed as they were supposed to be. Brian Henson did his job and pulled the characters the direction they were supposed to be. But I still think the movie failed. I just don't think it worked, but I don't think it's because the Muppets weren't the Muppets. I just think it was, I don't know, the storyline as a whole or just the way they decided to proceed. unless someone wants to disagree with me on that point, I'm willing to hear it, you know.
I mean, no, I would say, in fact, even better than that, it's a segue into our final judgments. I mean, Matt, you want to start us off? Do you have any final thoughts?
Some final thoughts. It had some good stuff. Like, I liked the opening song. That was really dark for a kid's movie. But the kid, when he was singing, his voice was way too high and too faint.
He was a castrato.
Okay.
I hope not.
And
no, he grew up.
The Cabin Fever song I liked. They have some... Actually, here's something that's interesting. They talk about kind of everyone is a hero of their own story. You know, Tim Curry makes this whole speech about how the Spanish hate Sir Francis Drake and the British love him. They talk about pirates. You know, we're a brotherhood and we all share with each other. I mean, someone's been reading Marcus Rediker, he was a historian. He seems to view the pirates as sort of a proto-communist naval rebellion.
You know, for those of you who don't know what Matt's talking about, this might be the first episode with a, you know, bibliography, but read Villains of All Nations. It's not bad, but, you know, Marcus Rediker. Anything else?
Of course, that might be crediting them with a bit too much thoughtfulness.
Might not. I mean, it's the right time period.
And I did like, and I'm going
to... I mean, social banditry? Who knows? Yeah, it could be Hobbes bomb, too.
And I'm going to horrify someone. I actually liked Don't Cry For Me, Benjamin. I thought that was funny.
I like these studio notes. This is good.
So, but it didn't really seem... I mean, it had some good parts, but I didn't really find it that inspiring and entertaining overall. I mean, maybe if you want to see a Muppet movie, see it once.
Are you inspired generally by Muppets? I mean, I am, so it's a fair question.
Do you hear the frogs singing the song of angry puppets? It is the music of a vaudeville that will not be
again. Are you pitching me a Muppet version of Les Mis?
Oh, that yes. would be great. Because,
yes.
Yes, oh my that would God. Be awesome.
Because if I may, there's no way that Fozzie could sing worse than Russell Crowe, so.
Mind blown.
Kermit could be Valjean. Who could be Javert?
Javert should be Fozzie.
Captain Eagle might work.
Javert should... Well, yeah, Sam the Eagle, you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be Javert.
Sam would be good. Maybe that's one of the few real people.
I'd like to see Rolf as one of the innkeepers.
Oh! Who's the lady love? Not. It shouldn't be Piggy this time around.
It should be... What's the woman from...
Cassette.
From the Electric Mayhem.
Janice.
Yes, Janice.
So who would Miss Piggy be? Madame Thénardier, the innkeeper's wife?
Yeah, that'd be good.
I just want to see Sweetums as Gavroche.
Oh, wow. Bold. Bold. And we would still need Gonzo and Rizzo, just like in Muppet Christmas Carol, to be the narrators. Because,
yes.
Because again, it has to be a neat 100 minutes, right? It has to be a tight 100 minutes for them to do it as a Muppet movie.
Before we go further, can we like start writing this down and pitching it to the Jim Henson company?
Write that down. Yes.
Write this down, Matt.
Trademark Disney. No, copyright dude lettered, though. Come on, we've got to do this. I love that.
We could put out our very own fan fiction.
Oh, boy.
No.
Because
fan fiction
be
is for masturbation purpose only. Thomas, do you have closing thoughts? Not anymore. I know. I ruined you.
Okay. Okay, so as pointed out, there were, you know, your few adult jokes that the Muppets are required. And as I said earlier, the Muppets were the Muppets. But I still think this movie just kind of falls short of, you know, the classic oeuvre that is the Muppets. And I think, as Daniel put earlier, if you're a completist, yes, you need to see it. Actually, this is the first time I've ever sat through the entire thing. So I now can check that one off the bucket list that is the Henson Muppets. But I really think you could probably skip it and be a complete human.
Thank you. Daniel, final thoughts.
I've never seen a Muppet movie that I just flat out hated. There's been some I've been disappointed in, and Treasure Island is going towards that. I mean, it just doesn't land for me as much as I feel it should, because I know how clever and original and inspiring the Muppets can be. through their songs, through the characters and how simple they are and how simple their interaction is. I mean, I use the word simple, but there is something at everyone's core that that speaks to. But this time, I just wasn't hearing that voice. I just wasn't hearing that. Maybe they just used the wrong source material. Maybe they weren't trying as hard, but there's much better Muppet movies and episodes of their TV show out there. Check those out instead.
Thank you, Daniel. So for me, it's tricky, and it's tricky in the same way Daniel brought up, and I'm not going to try to be, well, I'm going to try not to be too emotional about this. The Muppets are always one of those touchstone happy places for me. And it's just that the Muppets represent a very organized world wherein when chaos happens at the end of the day, there's some sort of simple, I don't even know what it is. It's just that the Muppets represent something that is hopefully understandable at the end of the day. Maybe that's the way to put it. When I was coming up with a theory for TV, I always said that any show would have that one episode that made it memorable. And great shows have too many. And so you fight over them. Like, if there was one episode, if I said, if you had to burn all of Seinfeld down to one episode, what would it be?
The contest?
I would say this: the soup Nazi. You know, like, there's an argument there. The Simpsons is the same way. Great shows are hard to fight. But even a shitty, terrible, awful, worthless, I waste too many brain cells or $20 on the DVD set, you could still find one episode of any TV show where that one creator was inspired. With the Muppets, they've had 7 or 8 movies. Would this be the one I selected? No. Is this the best one? God, not even close. Is it something not worth watching then? I would say absolutely not. Is it, it still has its moments. It's inoffensive. It's enjoyable. And even who someone who doesn't love the Muppets enjoy it? It's fine. It's perfectly manageable. It's 100 minutes. Anyone can watch something for 100 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and you want to turn it off? I've watched HDTV more than that. I've watched Antiques Roadshow more than that. And Antiques Roadshow, you're waiting for that 6 seconds where that person is either heartbroken or inspired by the fact that that one, tampon that their grandmother had is worth $20. You know what I mean? Like, it's that painting or that statue. I don't know. I love the Muppets because that inherent sense of humor is so cliche. And it is cliche, but they just know how to work those TV tropes, those movie tropes, whatever you want to say.
Did you say TV tropes?
I know.
Now, Matt.
I owe Matt $5. however, before I owe anyone else $5, we are unfortunately out of time. And so if you have a grandmother's...
Don't finish that statement.
Yeah, no. I was going to say painting, but I don't know. If you can't get the Muppets, I guess watch Antiques Roadshow. Recently, someone found a grenade that they had to close the show down and blow up because apparently it wasn't defused. They just brought in an old grenade.
I would catch a grenade from sorry. I don't know. I'm sorry.
But while I say this is the end of this episode, don't worry. We're going to do something else by the Muppets because, it's the first thing I think of when I think of Christmas season. Mm-hmm. And it's the first thing probably any of us think of when we think of a road trip movie. And so without further ado, please tune in this week, next week, every future week when I decide to publish something, apparently, because we'll put a little bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Oh, I got the madness.
I got cabin fever. I've got it.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Coxey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.